11. First thing is approval of the agenda, Mr. Baker.
Yes, and I would recommend several changes. Under executive session, we do not need the land acquisition item or job applicants' qualifications.
Land acquisition, job applicants' qualifications. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Anything else from council? I'll entertain a motion to approve the amended agenda.
You got it.
Need a second?
Thank you.
A motion to second to approve the agenda as amended. Any questions? Take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. In our packets, we had the minutes from July 19th. Any questions or corrections of those minutes? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. Reading of correspondence, Mr. Moore?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. There's several letters. The first one is from the Delaware SPCA. Addressed to Councilwoman Joan Deaver. On behalf of all of us at the Delaware SPCA, thank you for awarding us a grant of $1,000 in support of our Georgetown spay-neuter clinic. Since we receive no state or county funding, this grant is important to our work in Sussex County and will be used to subsidize spay-neuter surgeries for low-income pet owners. In the past several years, the Delaware SPCA has made great strides by reducing euthanasia and implementing programs that made us the state of Delaware's leading provider of spay-neuter services. In 2010, the Delaware SPCA neutered over 7,000 cats and dogs at its clinics. With the recent expansion of our Georgetown clinic, we will serve even more Sussex animals this year, helping us to reduce animal overpopulation at its source. The Delaware SPCA operates the only animal shelter and low-cost spay-neuter clinic in Sussex County. We are not affiliated with any other SPCAs or national organizations. We depend on local donations to fund our operations. I invite you and council to visit us and see the clinic in action. And thank you again for your support of the Delaware SPCA and Kavanaugh, Executive Director. The next letter is from the Delaware NAACP Youth and College Division, and it's addressed to all council persons. To whom it may concern. We, the members of Lower Sussex Youth Council, would like to thank you for all your support, as well as for the contributions you have made on behalf of our Youth Council. Without your support, we would not be able to accomplish many of our goals. Through your support, we were able to travel to the 102nd NAACP Annual Convention. In previous years, we were unable to do so. We could only afford to send our youth advisor. This year, we were able to send our council president, Mary Batten, vice president, Grace Batten, and our council chaplain, Earl Batten, who are also appreciative of the contributions that you have made. By going to this convention and attending the various workshops, we were able to gather information, bring it back, and strengthen the various youth adult councils throughout this great state of Delaware. We were taught that in order to lead, we first must follow. In doing just that, we are following in the footsteps of the great leaders that are before us now in hopes that one day we can be as great as examples we have now. In closing, we cannot thank you enough for all the support, whether it be monetary or just words of encouragement. It goes a long way. Every time the opposition comes upon us and say, no, you can't, you members of the council always come along and pat us on the back and tell us, yes, you can. We appreciate everything that you do for us as county council members, as well as supporters of our youth council. We are forever indebted to you, Mary Batten. Next letter is from Sussex County Habitat for Humanity, and it was addressed to Mr. Baker. Thank you and the Sussex County Council for your support of affordable housing in Sussex County, especially your support of Habitat for Humanity as a means to address the needs of low-income households and those earning between 25% and 60% of the average median income. During the 7 years I've served with the Sussex County Habitat for Humanity, the council has always been as supportive as they could of our work. Here are some examples. One, we have received several grants to improve our service and build homes. Two, every few months we host a county employee volunteer day where employees help build a habitat house. Earlier this year, we were grateful that you and Councilman Vincent took the time to volunteer with us. Three, the county has a rental agreement with us for $1 a month for land on an old Superfund site where we built a storage building for supplies and equipment. As a home builder, this space has been very helpful to our mission. And four, our work together over the past 2 years with the Neighborhood Stabilization Program has probably had the largest impact on our ability to provide home ownership to the very low income. Because of this partnership, we were able to purchase, rehabilitate, and sell six additional affordable homes to low-income families in Sussex County. Considering that we only built and sold five traditional Habitat homes last year, this partnership doubled the number of families we could serve in fiscal year 2011. I do not see a second page on this. I thought maybe it was on the back, but again, this was from Habitat for Humanity, and maybe it got taken off here. I apologize, but I do not see.
That's good enough. You've probably heard of that.
Okay. The next letter is for First State Resource Conservation and Development Council, Inc. Dear Mr. Baker, I'm delighted to offer this letter of support for the Sussex County Community Development Housing Division Community Development Block Grant Initiative. I endorse support the work of Sussex County Community Development and Housing Division as you work to overcome housing issues faced by the residents in low-income communities. The First State Resource Conservation and Development's Home Repair Project shares your mission of assisting low-income homeowners help alleviate the unsafe and/or unhealthy conditions in their home. At this time, there's a critical shortage of available low, moderate cost housing available, so it is imperative that the current stocks of this housing is maintained, enabling the current residents to remain safely in their own homes. As a partner in this endeavor, the First State Resource Conservation and Development Council Home Repair Project will collaborate with the Sussex County Community Development and Housing Division Center in every way possible to achieve this worthy objective. I look forward to continuing our collaborative relationship and working together to better serve the needs of low-income residents of Sussex County. We next have a thank you, and it's from the Delaware Senior Olympics, and it lists several persons who have signed their names, and we at the Delaware Senior Olympics Board of Directors wish to express our appreciation for your generous donation. And that is all the correspondence that I have, Mr. President.
Any other?
No, that was it.
Well, Council, anything? Move on, Mr. Baker, report from the County Administrator.
Yes, thank you. The first item is Delaware District 3 Softball World Series, which we are proud to announce will again be in Sussex County. And with us today, we have Mr. Martin Donovan. And I think Mr. Donovan has a short report to explain.
Thank you, Jay. Good morning.
Morning.
Good
morning.
As you said, my name is Martin Donovan, and I'm here to talk to you, report to you about the Senior Softball World Series, and thank you for the support Council has given us for the past 7 years and this year. As probably known by now, this is one of the eight World Series that the Little League hosts around the world. Every year, 2.8 million kids try to get into one of these World Series. The 2011 World Series will be held at Roxana, August 7th through the 13th, at the Lower Sussex Little League Complex. This is the 38th Senior Softball World Series and the eighth one in Delaware. Participants come from all over the world. They're young ladies, 2014 to 16. We have six U.S. teams and four international teams. Last year, we had teams from New York, Virginia, Texas, Indiana, and Arizona, and our District 3 host team, which we get because we host this, we got an automatic berth, was Laurel. We have four international teams. Last year, they came from Guam, Canada, Puerto Rico, and the Middle East. This year, we know so far that Puerto Rico will be back, the Philippines will be back, and we have Italy for the first time. We are now looking for somebody who can speak Italian. Because the team does not speak English. So if any of you speak Italian, we'll draft you real quick. We also have 12 umpires that come from all over the world. This year, we got them from California, Latin America, state of Washington, Pennsylvania, Indiana, West Virginia, Connecticut, Florida. And these guys pay their way to get here. Let me rephrase that. These umpires pay their way. We've got two women this year. They pay their way to get here. They're our responsibility when we pick them up from the airport, but that's how dedicated they are to the organization. Sometimes when you run an event, you're just, it's like you can't see the forest for the trees. So that's kind of the people who run this tournament. Sometimes we forget how big this thing is. Since 2007, it's been on ESPN. And once again, it's going to be on ESPN. The only question is what channel. I think it's probably going to be on ESPNU this year.
They kind of, be live?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's been live since 2008. But our start time used to be at 11 o'clock to stay on ESPN2, and they gave me the opportunity to move it to 2 o'clock, which I think put us on ESPNU because of the time slot. But we can get it on cable here. Last year, you got an email about not being able to see the thing on the web. Well, mm-hmm. The company that does it is back. The only thing we hope is the internet connection is good, so not only will we be on ESPN, you'll be able to go on our website and see it. During the World Series week, there are about 16,000 people that look at the website. It's over 16,000. Delaware Tourism is estimated this generates over $1 million. Delaware Sports Commission has listed this as one of the major events in Delaware. To do this, it takes about 100 volunteers, and that covers all areas: security, concessions, grounds crew, medical staff, which includes the paramedics, and they do a fine job. And I think I reported to you before, we had a first serious thing last year with a heart attack. Lady was loaded up, taken to Salisbury, operated on, had stents put in, and 2 or 3 days later, she was back out there. She was from Guam. And I say interpreter, so if you speak Italian or know somebody that does, tell them to get in touch with us. To host this thing, it costs a lot of money. And once the teams arrive in Philadelphia, they're ours. They're picked up by buses and brought down to, this year we're staying in Seaford at the Holiday Inn Express. Last year, we spent over $60,000 for housing and food. Our slogan this year, we changed it just a little bit, is "The World Comes to Roxana." In 2 weeks, they'll be here. August 6th, the first team starts arriving, and I think Petey told me it's 8:20 in the morning that their first team will hit. I'd like to invite all of you to our opening ceremonies. It's August 7th. You should have gotten an invitation. And one of the neat things we did probably 2 years ago, the little Pat Knight girls, the special tournaments run in the district, they play at the World Series. They'll be playing every night, and they're also part of the opening ceremonies. But they're not part of the World Series, but we try to get them involved in it. So there are five teams from Sussex County that's going to be down there and be at the opening party. That was a neat thing. The party for the players and parents, which you're also invited to, is August 8th at Nanticoke Little League in Seaford. Again, I'd like to thank you for your support, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, Council?
Who's the host team this year, you said?
Don't know. They start playing Wednesday night.
Okay.
At Lower Sussex, so we'll know by this weekend. And a lot of the other teams will be, the regions will be determined this week and next.
Who's your prediction?
Huh?
What's your prediction?
I'm not going to go there.
Any more questions for Mr. Dunn?
Only Sam.
I got two no's on them questions.
Thank you
very much, and thank you very much for all unit committee do. It's a great operation you run down there, and it's somebody proud of this county. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Becker.
Thank you. The next item is a national EMS award. We are very pleased to announce that Sussex County's Paramedic Department has been awarded the Dick Furneaux Paid EMS Service of the Year Award by the National Association of EMTs. We believe this is an outstanding achievement. Our county's paramedic service was the sole winner of this national award this year.
Okay, good.
The award recognizes the outstanding service provided by the Sussex EMS service. And I think the incident that Mr. Donovan referred to from last year at the Senior League World Series. I think Mr. Hovenin was paramedic on duty then in that case. We wish to congratulate each member of the department for their outstanding work, which enabled the paramedic service to win this award. Mm-hmm. And turn it over to Mr. Stewart.
Thank you all. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today. I have with me Operations Manager Robbie Murray, Training Coordinator Joe Hoppel, Technical Services Division Manager Bobby Schoonover, and the infamous Eric Hovenin, who everybody knows, Eric Haybud Hovenin. He did do an outstanding job last year in helping to save the life of that woman who was having a heart attack. Thanks for the opportunity. I'd like to explain something about what my first question I had when I heard about the award was, who's Dick Furno? And we all know the name in the EMS business because Furno makes stretchers and cots. But Dick Furno was a true pioneer and innovator. He partnered with L. Borgroff in 1955 to create the Furno Washington Company, which today is a global leader in the manufacture and distribution of professional emergency healthcare products. Mr. Furno held many patents and innovated many designs and concepts that still impact EMS today. He pioneered the use of aluminum versus steel in cots to greatly reduce their weight, and he later went on to develop the first elevating ambulance cot and the first X-frame cot. His passion was to make EMS safe and easier to do, and that's exactly what he did. This award was created in his honor by the National Association of EMTs, and he also was a recipient of the National Association of EMTs Lifetime Achievement Award. This award is a celebration of his life and what he brought to the industry. The recipients of the Dick Furno Award exemplify his spirit and the attitude of continual improvement. Dick Furno Paid EMS Service of the Year, which is a national award by the National Association of EMTs, is considered a gold award. And he recognizes outstanding performance by a paid EMS service. The award will be presented to our organization at the EMS World Expo Conference to be held in Las Vegas, Nevada on August the 29th through September 2nd. Our agency was selected based on several nomination categories, and they are advances in EMS education and training, innovations in pre-hospital care and protocol development, involvement in the medical community, EMS systems and program upgrades and initiatives, worker safety and well-being programs and initiatives, injury and illness prevention and projects, public education project sponsorships and initiatives. This is truly an outstanding achievement and honor for Sussex County EMS. I would like to thank County Administrator Dave Baker, County Council President Mr. Honorable Mike Vincent, the other County Council members, and the people of Sussex County for allowing us to do what we do and to be recognized as this year's winner of the Paid EMS Service of the Year. Without your support, we could not have earned this award. Thank you.
Yes, we do have a proclamation to honor Sussex County Emergency Medical Services for earning the Dick Furno Paid EMS Service of the Year Award. Whereas the Sussex County Council wishes to recognize the Sussex County Emergency Medical Services for its latest achievement in earning the National Association of Emergency Medical Technicians Dick Furno Paid EMS Service of the Year Award. And whereas Sussex County EMS will be honored with the NAEMT's top award at its annual EMS World Expo on August 31st in Las Vegas, Nevada. And whereas Sussex County EMS provides state-of-the-art, life-saving pre-hospital care to the residents and visitors of Sussex County. And whereas Sussex County EMS and its paramedics have consistently demonstrated professionalism, dedication, and a superior quality of service to the public they serve, and whereas Sussex County EMS has earned the trust and respect of the local healthcare community, volunteer fire service, and its professional peers throughout Delaware and across the nation. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Sussex County Council commends Sussex County Emergency Medical Services on being the recipient of the NAEMT's Dick Furno Paid EMS Service of the Year Award and proclaims Tuesday, July 26, as a day for all Sussex County residents to honor the division's latest achievement.
Need a wide angle. Not in the middle necessarily, but it is. The outskirts. All Okay. Again, thank you very much for all you guys do. We appreciate it. You certainly provide a lot of services to county that's is excellent service. Thank you. Thank you.
The next item is a report from the Fort Miles Historical Association, and we have with us today Dr. Gary Ray. He's been very active with this group, president of the group, and he would like to present some information about their next project.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me. Thank you, Ms. Deaver, for in particular for allowing me to be here.
Happy to do it.
Before I start, I'd like to commend another old Cape and Lopin school board member along with myself, Dave Baker. A lot of people forget Dave was on the Cape school board. I don't forget because I used to work for him back in the day. So I'd like to join everybody else and commend Dave for all his efforts for Sussex County in general. And it's been a great working with you, Dave, for the last 30, 35 years. So.
Thank you very much, Gary.
I'd also like to thank Sussex County Council. I came before the council a couple years ago and talked about Fort Miles and kind of gave you a briefing. I thought about time to come back again and tell you where we are in Fort Miles and some things that we're doing on the eastern side of the county that a lot of people maybe aren't familiar with. And one thing in particular, which is going to impact Sussex County and Georgetown in particular, particularly all of us who get caught with these coal trains come through the middle of Georgetown. You're going to get a real shock here soon when you see a gun barrel from the battleship Missouri replace one of them coal cars coming through Georgetown. It's going to be a real sight to behold, and that's one of the things I'd like to tell the council about. I've given you a handout. The first part is a recent article, a couple of recent articles, one by Molly Murray in the News Journal, another one by Ron MacArthur. In the Cape Gazette, Ron's here with us, of course, today, talking about our Missouri effort. We've got two big efforts going right now. The battleship Missouri, you'll remember, was the ship that the Japanese delegation surrendered on September 2nd, 1945. I don't remember that, but I was a little two-year-old at the time, but my dad talked about it a lot. And we have an opportunity now to get one of the 16-inch guns off the battleship Missouri that was on her the day the Japanese surrendered. It's always been in our strategic plan at Fort Miles to have a gun representative of every gun that was at Fort Miles, and we've done a pretty good job over the years. We've been working on Fort Miles now for 11 years, and there are 340 of us. One of my board members has escorted me out here today, Dan Lyons from Bethany Beach. We've done a real good job in getting all the guns, but the 16-inch gun is the one we've really been wanting. And there are only eight of them left. They're all down on the ground at St. Julian's Creek, which is an annex of the Norfolk Naval Yard. So we've been working now for the last 2 months to have to write a plan that the Navy will accept to donate the barrel from the battleship Missouri to the state of Delaware, which, of course, is where Cape and Lopin State Park is run by Delaware Parks. So we're the friends group of Delaware Parks. And so we've written the plan to get the Navy to accept our request to donate barrel number 371. Or if you go on page 4 of your handout, you see barrel 371 in the front turret of the battleship Missouri. One of the interesting things now is the nine barrels that are on the battleship Missouri are not the barrels that were on her when the Japanese surrendered. She was rebarreled in the 50s. After Korea, because she shot all of her barrels out. So they put new barrels on her and all the other Iowa classes. Of course, the New Jersey's sitting up at Camden, and it was rebarreled too. So all the barrels that were taken off of her in 1955 were either out at Hawthorne, Nevada, or they're out at St. Julian's Creek, Virginia. Sadly, there were 15 barrels in the desert at Henderson, Nevada, and they were destroyed, cut up, sold to surplus 3 weeks ago. So we've got a race on our hands. The Navy wants to get rid of the barrels. The Navy wants to cut them up. They've asked for states, communities to show interest. We're working hand in glove with the Secretary of State, Ken Bennett of Arizona, Arizona once one of the barrels for their 70th anniversary in Arizona of the sinking of the Arizona. They're getting a barrel from the Arizona and a barrel from the Missouri, and they're going to make a park in downtown Phoenix. So we're working with the state of Arizona to see if we can share some costs in getting the barrel. Their barrel, the one they want, is barrel 384, which is right beside our barrel 371 down on the ground in St. Julian's. And if we can work together, share lift costs and so on, we can cut the price down. We have worked out the logistics. We figure we can get the barrel here for about $80,000. It'll come across by rail car. Fortunately, the Bay Coast Line has just cranked up the railroad car barge across Chesapeake Bay, so she'll be barged across Chesapeake Bay on a car, come into Cape Charles, and then just come right up beautiful Delmarva on that car, come right through Georgetown, come right through Milford, and then I'm assured by the manager of the Bay Coast of Delaware Coastline, they're going to pull out their engine number 187. That engine's actually got a website. I don't know whether you know that or not, but I went on their website. The most beautiful engine they've got. We're going to put American flag, Delaware flag on the front of her, and she's going to pull her all the way into Lewis. We figure it's going to take about a week to come up. Now, we've got to raise all this money ourselves. I'm appealing to my organization. You see on page 5 a little handout that's going out to all of the 350 members of the Fort Miles Historical Association in a renewal letter. We're like Arizona. We need money to do this. My group's pledged $10,000. Four of my board members stepped up along with me to additionally pledge $1,000. We've got Delaware Department of Tourism's pledged $2,500. Other groups are coming up. We're going to have more fundraisers in the area. We've actually requested the Navy give us a year to do this, to put the package together. But we've got a plan B in case they don't, if they just dig in their heels and say no, September 30th is the date, and we're going to cut them up on August the 1st or October the 1st. We hope that they don't do that. We think that they won't. So you're going to hear more about that effort through our fundraising appeals and so on. And I'm hoping the council can help us out on this, because once this baby comes up Delmarva and gets into Sussex County, Delaware, it's going to be like Abe Lincoln's body going from Washington to Springfield when he was assassinated. People are going to line the railroad to see this beast. She weighs 136 tons, and she's 66 feet long. So it's about the size of two coal cars. She's a monster. So that's our big effort right now. Our long-range effort I've included for you is our Fort Miles Historical Complex concept plan. We're building a museum inside Battery 519. Some of you are familiar with it. I know a couple of you have been out there to see it. We've been working with Werner Johnson, the architects out of Boston, and Becker Morgan out of Dover, Delaware, to come up with a plan to, when we're done, have the best World War II museum inside a World War II facility in the country. And I've included for you the Werner Johnson schematics on page 8. You see our museum plan. Once again, you're underground in this museum. Remember, our museum is inside the Great Dune. So the Great Dune is, one of the largest sand dunes on the East Coast, and it's the only one you can go inside of. And so we've got 420 feet of corridor that on a hot day like today, and it's been hot recently, but you go inside the bunker, it's a steady 52 degrees because you're 30 feet underground. We just got a HVAC contract, thanks to the City of Lewis and Barbara Vaughn and Town Council of Lewis. They allowed us to piggyback on their stimulus plan, and we got a $175,000 HVAC grant from federal stimulus money to build a geothermal system inside the bunker. So we're working on that. The bids are going to be let next week on that. So we've been pressing ahead on our long-range project, which is our museum project, and I wanted you to see that. And then the last page is our gun room. We have the only static display of a 12-inch gun inside its proper casemate in the country, in little old Delaware. When we pull off this 16-inch gun from the battleship Missouri, we'll be the only place in the country that'll have a static display of a 16 and a static display of a 12. And we're hoping that, once we get this museum done, we get about 10,000 visitors a year. once we get done with this, you know, we can attract 30, 40, 50,000 visitors a year to our museum and therefore increase Delaware tourism, tourism to Sussex County. And, you know, we'll become a place to be. If you know anything about World War II and interested in World War II, we'll be the place to, one of the places to come to see more about World War II and visit the gun from the battleship Missouri that was honored the day the Japanese surrendered. So I just wanted to come and brief you on that, answer any of your questions. Thank you for your support in the past. Might be looking for a little more support in the future.
Okay. Any questions of council?
Interesting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Very
appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Thanks, Gary.
And the next item is a proclamation for General Aviation Appreciation Month. And we have today Mr. Hicken, who brought this to our attention. And I'll just read the proclamation proclaiming the month of July as General Aviation Appreciation Month. Whereas general aviation and community airports play a critical role in the lives of our citizens as well as in the operation of our businesses and farms. And whereas Sussex County has a significant interest in the continued vitality of general aviation, aerospace, aircraft manufacturing, educational institutions, and aviation organizations, and community airports and airport operators. And whereas Sussex County is home to two public use airports, and whereas Sussex County's aviation industry contributes $154 million yearly to the county's economy. Whereas general aviation in the county sustains 1,048 jobs, both direct and induced, and contributes a total impact of $5.6 million to the economy. Whereas general aviation plays a vital role in the county's response to emergencies and natural disasters. Whereas Sussex County is home to the Deltek Community College Owens Campus Aviation Maintenance Training Program, with plans to expand programs to incorporate both power plant and avionics training. And whereas many businesses in the county depend heavily on general aviation and community airports for the continued flow of commerce, tourists, and visitors to our county. And whereas various organizations like National Business Aviation Association, National Association of State Aviation Officials, Alliance for Aviation Across America, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, National Air Transportation Association recognize and promote the interests and importance of aviation in Sussex County and throughout the world. Now, therefore, be it resolved that Sussex County Council does hereby proclaim general aviation to be a vital resource to the Sussex County and declares the month of July as General Aviation Appreciation Month.
Jim, I want to congratulate you on the fine job you're doing managing the airport. And in spite of what you hear on the news about corporate jets, don't pay any taxes, I don't believe it.
We have how many employees out there works on corporate jets?
Well, there's 1,000 employees or so at the airport itself.
Now, can you imagine those employees don't pay any taxes? Can you imagine what kind of job they'd have if our president would say go away with the corporate jets? Just don't believe everything you hear. Our county does very well on corporate jets that come to this county, and our people in this county have jobs because of corporate jets.
Equal time.
Here's your proclamation and congratulations. I guess we want our picture taken with this. You're taller, so I'll probably not bite for once. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir, very much. Thanks, Jim.
The next item is an early retirement option proposal. This year's budget anticipated that the council would consider another limited early retirement option. And the current economic situation has resulted in the reduction of demand for various services provided by certain departments, which in turn has reduced the workload of those departments. This proposed offer of an additional 3 years of service to be added to the pension calculation would be subject to the following terms. And this is something that we've been working on for a few months now. The offers would be made only to employees in departments or divisions that have eligible employees whose position could be eliminated. The offers would be made only to vested employees who are eligible to participate in the county's pension plan, and that could include those who would add, where we would add the 3 years of service to their work time. Elected officials would not be eligible. Participation would be voluntary. And based on our analysis, we are suggesting that this offer be made to the following departments and or divisions: Building Code, Community Development and Housing, Constables, County Council, Finance Administration, Personnel / Human Resources, Engineering Utility Permits, Engineering Utility Planning, and Engineering Utility Engineering. And we're estimating that the county can save substantial funds as a result of the offer. The current budget includes an estimate of $100,000 savings this year as a result of the offer. As required by law, employees, if the offer is made, employees would be eligible for the offer and would have 45 days to notify the county as to whether or not they're interested. And again, it would be voluntary on the part of the individual employees to make that decision.
Any questions of council?
Okay, I do have a proposed motion.
Okay.
Be it moved that the Sussex County Council approves a limited early retirement option for certain departments / divisions that have experienced a reduction in workload and or demand for services as a result of the economy with the following terms. A, participating departments include Building Code, Community Development and Housing, Constables, County Council, Finance Administration, Personnel, Human Resources, Engineering Utility Permits, Engineering Utility Engineering, and Engineering Utility Planning. Departments or divisions would be eligible to participate. B, to be eligible to participate, an employee must work for a participating department, be vested in and eligible for the county's pension plan, which shall be calculated with an additional 3 years of service or age for and not be an elected official. And C, eligible employees who voluntarily elect to participate will receive in return for the participation an additional 3 years accredited service for purposes of the calculation of pension benefits.
I'll entertain that motion.
Second.
I have a motion, Mr. Wilson.
Second.
Mr. Phillips. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Well, I'm glad that we're doing this. I hope that maybe some of this money can be put toward our hiring of a certified planner for the county. Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Okay. Now, the next item is Board of Adjustment Fees and discussion and possible introduction of an ordinance regarding Board of Adjustment Fees. As you recall, last week we had considerable discussion regarding the fees we charge. Mr. Patrick Vanderslice has put together a draft ordinance for your consideration. The ordinance would change the fee for variances from $400 to $150, and it would also, as written, would change the fee for special use exceptions that apply to manufactured homes where they are single-family dwellings to $150 from $400. It would cover with manufactured homes, emergency or hardship situations, and other instances where the manufactured home is used as a single-family residence. Mr. Lank and I have gone over this, and basically the fee variances would be $150. Special use exceptions would be $400, except for those that are related to manufactured homes as single-family residences. So that's what this ordinance does, basically, to change the fees to that, as noted.
But only on manufactured housing?
All variances, the fee would go from 400 to 150.
All, no matter where it is.
Right. But for special use exceptions.
Like a amusement park or something like that?
Right. That would stay at 400, mm-hmm. but for ones that apply to a manufactured home where it is a manufactured home, not used by a business, but used by an individual as a single-family resident, the fee would go to $150.
If a developer who's got plotted out a bunch of lots and he wants to get a variance on a number of them, does he come in with like a big lump of variances and get charged $150? Is that?
Oh, maybe Mr. Lang could answer that.
Probably not.
Well, wait a minute. I know, but what's the ordinance? Well, what? I'm just curious how the ordinance would address it.
What's your question again?
Well, the question would be is if there's a one property owner owns four or five lots in a subdivision, maybe a developer, I don't know how you want to put it, but they come in with, I know I saw in tier, they have tiered systems in these other counties where if you have a multiple lots, are we just going to charge $150 for one applicant with multiple lots?
Well, that's the way it's been handled before. They'd be coming in and applying for a blank, what you would refer to as a blanket variance, which would cover, let's say, changing a setback within a manufactured home park from 10, which would be required in the newer parks, to 5. Then they'd apply for a blanket for the whole park, or the whole section of the park. It would be one application because it's one site.
Yeah, it's
very rare. It doesn't happen very often.
That's my question.
Very rare.
Very, very rare.
I missed last week, and was there conversation about a tiered system where certain things maybe would be over the counter and others would, you know, be tiered up like a sheds and stuff?
The only thing we discussed in the past has been, it wasn't last week, but in the past we discussed the administrative variance for less than a foot. That was
right.
Yeah, we did. I did. Think that I like the tiered system Kent County had. I had mentioned that at a meeting, but that's not in here.
Now, the only difficulty I see with that is the one ordinance said 1 to 3 variances would be one fee, and 4 to 6 would be another fee. It's just a matter of it's the same parcel, it's the same advertisements, the same improvements, and typically they already exist. It's not something proposed.
Approximately how many variances do we get a year? Would you say
they're basically holding their agendas to 10 public hearings per meeting twice a month? That's 240 max. And we're not doing that right now. Some cases there's 4, some cases there's 6.
Okay, but still a couple hundred. Couple
used to be 15 a meeting, and it got to a point of being hard to control.
Well, the only concern I have is it just kind of breaks with the tradition we had, which has been, I think, established, you know, for many years, where we have the fees, you know, equal the cost of whatever the application or whether the service is somebody wants, you know, from county government. And this kind of deviates from that model. And I think that model's helped, you know, put the county in a good financial position, and where the tax base isn't subsidizing, you know, some department or some fee structures that individuals need. So I just have a problem because I believe we kind of calculated at $400. We kind of break even because you have to have when somebody does a variance, what's it involve? Advertising and an inspection?
You don't break even at $400.
We lose money.
If you calculate reimbursement of the board members, the staff time, et cetera.
So we lose money at $400. Right, okay. This just, again, I just think it doesn't make economic sense for the county who's, again, taking pride on a lot of these fees we have, you know, equal the cost of the service. So I'd rather look to a tiered system. I can't be comfortable cutting it from $400, which you just stated we're losing money there, to go to $150, so we're losing a lot more money, and I just don't think the public would appreciate in these economic times that we make that kind of business decision on a service that the county provides. So I don't know how anybody else feels, but I still not real comfortable with this this ordinance. Is, it just goes from 400 to 115. Just seems excessive.
Mr. President,
going in the wrong direction. That's just basically.
Any else on council? Mr. Phillips.
I'll be introducing this today. I think it's simple and it's easy to understand. And when it comes to fees covering the cost, you have to keep in mind that several of our departments have surpluses in the millions. You look at the sheriff's office, the recorder of deeds office, the register of wills office, and much of this money is coming in and going into the general fund, which I think in these hard economic times is appropriate to use to help these homeowners who are trying to comply with regulations that we create. So I do intend to introduce this. We can modify it, as Lawrence said last week, to numbers in between the 150 and the 400 following the public hearing. Mm-hmm. And it may be appropriate at that time, if you did want to do something different, we could consider it then.
Mr. Phillips, the only concern would be is if somebody wanted to say, like, a shed should cost X, something else should cost X, something else could cost X. We can't modify to do that. We can only modify it with a flat fee, which would still be losing money, but, you know, we could go up. But I'd love to be able to have the option. Maybe some people think about this, because it was the brilliance of a past council. You know, there's like guys like Finley Jones and people like that who were way ahead of their time and looking at some of these issues. And so a tiered system would probably be, I think, the fairest and the best way to deal with this situation. I'd like to have the ability to modify a ordinance maybe a week from now, or whenever it gets, you know, on for the public hearing. We might hear from some people and say, yeah, that makes the most sense, because I don't like seeing us, again, that somebody's subsidizing it. And when the county has been making money, that is, Mr. Phillips, the reason maybe we have some, you know, the lowest taxes in the nation, because we've been running this county with collecting fees that cover the costs of services. And when we have a surplus somewhere, that goes back in and keeps our costs down, which is good. I mean, that's good business. So just because we make some money here doesn't mean this service over here should be provided. What we ought to be doing maybe is reducing the fees in those departments that are collecting too much and benefit those people who need those services. So I just think I'd like to have the option of having a conversation when we have a public hearing that we could do a tier system.
Let me remind you that you voted for increasing the fees in those departments in the past, so I don't know what your change of attitude is.
No, the change of attitude, I don't like the – it seems like there's a move to reduce, to cut costs. And so I'm just pointing out that going from $400 I agreed to, Mr. Lank just said it still doesn't cover the costs. Mm-hmm. So if I was taking the position that we had to do 100% of the costs, I'd have been – voting against that and supporting even higher fees. But I was comfortable with $400. It seemed reasonable. But I think that if it looks like we want to address this a different way, I think the way Kent County and some of these other counties do it with a tiered system would be much more appropriate. And I even think over the counter, some of this administrative stuff. So there's a way to, you know, improve the Board of Adjustment fees, but I don't think just doing this is it is simple. That is, it's exactly, and it'd be easy for you to understand it, but I think we need to look at a tiered system. So I'd like to have that option. So is there a way we can get that option?
I don't know. I'm going to ask Ms. Moore. Mm-hmm. If this is introduced today, mm-hmm. and we set a public hearing date, and public can come forward and make any comments they choose to, and anybody on council can make any comments they choose to and or suggestions, my understanding is, as long as whatever was suggested would not be lower than the proposed 150 or higher than the current 400. Is that correct?
Any amendments should be amendments that are contained in the title of the ordinance that was introduced itself, which in this case relates to Board of Adjustment fees. The only thing that's been changed by this proposed ordinance that at this point has not been introduced is the fees itself. It has nothing to do with tiers or any other amendments to the ordinance. So we would have to look at any specific suggestion that came up and have to determine on a case-by-case method if that would be something that would be allowable.
Okay.
But at this point, there's been no ordinance introduced. At such point as the ordinance is introduced, if it's today or whenever, at that point, all discussions will cease, because once it's introduced, the discussions would take place at a public hearing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Do I understand correctly that this would help protect the folks living in affordable housing, like the folks living in the manufactured home parks, reduce the cost if they have to relocate or replace an old garage, old shed? Is the way this is written, are they protected under how we have this written, Mr. Moore?
Ask that question again, please. This is just changing the fees is the only thing that this is doing.
Well, I know, but the fees, but the fee, $400 fee plus a survey cost of, you know, exceeded $1,000 for some of these people. So I like seeing the fee reduced from 400 down to a lower figure, specifically for the people who live in affordable housing and manufactured home parks.
Yeah, I don't believe that this addresses the issue of the survey whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It only addresses the fees. Addresses the fees on these specific items that were contained.
Yeah, there would still be requirements of the survey and these other issues.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's where we need to reform this area, but this doesn't do it. This is just a Band-Aid over it. So, I mean, there ought to be more discussion on it and do it right, because a shed in a mobile home park, one property owner owns that whole park. I would think if the management didn't have a problem with it, and we have setbacks between everything, and they meet the setbacks, if the one guy owns all the land, because a lot of these parks don't even have monuments, right, anyway, to identify where the things are.
That's why they apply for variances,
right? That's what I say. But then when they apply for the variance, that triggers surveys and other things, and the park owners put that burden on the applicant and stuff like that. So, you know, a tiered system, we could address a lot of these things and take care of a lot of these little fires, because the whole system, there's been no complaints except with sheds and manufactured housing parks. That's been the only group that felt that they've been burdened with the excessive fees, and they may have, because it's not their land.
Right.
It's somebody else's land, and they're having to pay $100, $400, $500 for a survey to be able to put a shed on somebody else's land. So,
over 600 for the survey.
Whatever it is, mm-hmm. I'm just saying that's the excessive cost. So we're doing a knee-jerk reaction to drop all the fees for $400 when there's been no complaints except for one little small group of people living in mobile home parks on other people's lands with sheds. So I think we ought to just look at the problem and not put the county in a financial situation that's we're losing money. And I don't think we should be losing money when we're already losing money on the service. So we're just really going backwards on that. And it's hard to raise it. Once you do this, it's hard to go back up.
Well, I think one thing, obviously you were on county business last week, but it was reported that there are some people who have come in to get permits or apply for variances and find it costs $400 and have just walked out. So I would question if they walked out too because they're not going to do it because they couldn't afford the $400, or they walked out and going to do it without paying $400.
But that, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much.
That.
Yeah,
but there could be other people out there that, I mean, some things people do on a small porch or whatever, that could be whatever, I guess, them a lot of money for the $400. I guess the question is, if what I'm hearing Councilman Cole say, the concern about having a tiered system, and I mean, we have been talking about this for a little bit of time here. When do you think you could have something like that inserted into this or changed? Or, because if I understand Mr. Moore correctly, that couldn't be done under this ordinance. Is that a correct statement?
I would definitely want to look at that when it came up, because I'm answering in the hypothetical at this point. But, you know, being conservative on answering a hypothetical, I would tend to say no, that this addresses fees only.
Mr. President.
Yes, sir, Phillips.
I feel like it probably is time for me to introduce this as it is, with the hopes that through the public hearing, if these issues that Mr. Cole raises are legitimate and we get testimony from the public or others that a better system could be made, we at that point can ask Lawrence to go back and maybe modify it. But I just think that we're shooting in the dark here. We've got a very simple ordinance, reduces these fees, which I consider a regulatory compliance tax, back to their level of $150, which was appropriate for years and years. So if I may, can I introduce it at this point?
Is it can be done now?
Okay.
Okay. Any more questions from Mr. Cole?
One last thing I'd just say, that when we look at the issue of doing the reducing this, they're still stuck with the survey in say the manufactured housing park, which is where most 90% of the complaints came. And I'm sure there's some. 90%. Okay.
the survey's the issue. What we ought to be doing is look at the ordinance and saying, you know, in these instances, there's a survey's not necessary. We'll take the $150, and then there's no survey necessary as long as they meet these other requirements. But you have done is they still are going to be $600, $800, or $600 plus $150. So you're still pushing $1,000. Then the shed's a couple $1,000.
Right.
So if you're trying to help, you are helping, but it's not the problem. The problem is some of the requirements we have on just the placement of a shed, which maybe isn't necessary to have a survey, especially on a park that the perimeter is already surveyed and the owner of the park is in agreement with it because he knows where everything is. And as long as the next neighbor's shed is at appropriate setbacks, so we ought to be trying to look at an ordinance that excludes that. So I think, again, we're just throwing something out. We're going to tie the staff up a lot. We're going to go through a whole, you know, thing, and then we're going to sit back and say, let's do something else. So I don't like wasting our time, staff time, and other people's time if we've got this kind of conversation going on right now. So that's amongst us. And people, a lot of times people don't show up. They just see the reduced rate. They say, that's great.
Oh, yeah.
But then when they still go in and pay the $150, they go, oh, I still got to get a survey. You know, that's the issue. So
I understand.
I'd still like the delay on it. I don't see the rush to judgment on this. This is not right. It's just another one's going to get rejected and drag it out and be more painful.
We talked about it last week, and here it is this week. I was kind of surprised to see it come up so soon. But I'm not sure that this is really what we were talking about, at least not what I had in mind.
Mr. President, did Mr. Phillips actually introduce the ordinance this time, or did you stop him before he did?
We haven't done that yet. Okay. I'll let Mr. Cole speak, Mrs. Deaver speak.
I'm done.
Anything else?
I'll go through the motions.
Now we'll recognize Mr. Phillips if he chooses to introduce his ordinance.
Yes, I'd like to introduce the ordinance.
Okay. So the ordinance for the, ordinance to amend Chapter 62 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 3, 62-7D, relating to board adjustment fees. So then there'll be a public hearing set?
Yes. Yes, there will.
We'll have that discussion, and we'll go from there.
Yes, the actual...
Hopefully people will show up and bring their thoughts.
Yes, the actual title of the ordinance is an ordinance to amend Chapter 62 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 3, Section 62-7D, related to Board of Adjustment Fees.
And Mr. Phillips has introduced that. Yep. Thank you, Mr. Baker. Thank you, Mr. Lang.
Thanks.
The next item is a report of the County Administrator Search Committee. And as you may have heard earlier, the County Administrator Search Committee has voted to recommend candidate O, Mr. Todd Lawson, to be the next county administrator. The committee has also negotiated with Mr. Lawson, and Mr. Lawson has considerable government experience. He is a graduate of Sussex Central High School, the University of Delaware, with a bachelor's degree in agriculture business management and a minor in political science. He has a law degree from George Mason School of Law. He currently works in Washington for Russ Reed Company, representing various clients, including municipalities, especially before the Congress, executive branch, and federal agencies. From July of 2005 to January of 2009, he served as Deputy Assistant Secretary for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. He assisted with the large HUD budget and oversaw several offices within HUD. From September 2002 to June 2005, Mr. Lawson worked for a law firm in Washington as a policy advisor, assisting with client representation. Mr. Lawson has strong roots in Sussex County. He grew up in the county and is anxious to return. And he would bring experience, especially in dealing with people and various organizations, to this position, as well as a local Sussex County background and a strong education. In terms of some of the terms we talked about a salary starting at $95,000, a one-year contract effective January 1st, 2012. We're beginning when the current county administrator leaves, and work would begin approximately August 10th. Benefits would include pension, medical insurance, et cetera, the same as for other full-time county employees. And I would be working with Mr. Lawson over the next few months to help him during a transition period. And I'd like to, we would like to, our committee would like to submit this recommendation to the county council for consideration.
Okay. Any questions of the committee from council? I would say not. Anyone care to make a motion?
For the assistance of our legal staff in light of this challenging process, we don't want to make any mistakes at this point. I have a motion. I move that Sussex County Council appoint Todd Lawson as county administrator appointee to work with current county administrator Dave Baker for a salary of $95,000 starting August the 10th, 2011, and that Mr. Lawson will assume the role of a county administrator no later than January 1, 2012, with a contract for 1 year at a salary of $102,500.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second. Question on the motion. I will take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I'll vote yes. Motion carried. Administrator's report.
Are you want me to go ahead?
Okay.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Just have one item on
I thought that's why previous councilman Jones was in the back room. He was going to be the next administrator.
I thought he was candidate out back there.
There's that Todd Lawson.
Morning. Good morning, Todd Lawson.
Good morning, all. It's great to be back.
Mm-hmm. It's good to have you back. It's been quite a process, as you're well aware of. But I think we've done due diligence. I think the committee is comfortable. The council is comfortable. And we certainly look forward to you starting on August the 10th. And at bright and early 8:30. And working with Mr. Baker.
Long time.
And yeah, be on time. But as you're well aware, when you and Dave both feel comfortable, when you're where you need to be, then he will certainly go off in the sunset as he chooses to do and retire to Chincoteague or somewhere, whatever. Any comments from council?
No. I would like to congratulate him and welcome home.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Look forward to working with you. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Take care.
Now, Mr. Guy, I want to talk to you. I'm sure about something. Or no. No, wait. Well, just stand by. Here comes all the reporters. They want to talk to you right now. They all want to take you to lunch, I think.
I just had one short item in the county administrator's report. Delaware Solid Waste Authority Recycle Delaware report. As per the attached notices, 57,000 pounds of recycled material was received at the county's West Complex Recycle Center during April, May, and June 2011. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Next on here, Mr. Lawrence Lank. You're back up. More ordinances.